It's Sunday, May 27th, 2012, and this is episode 70 of the Webcomic Beacon Newscast. Happy Memorial Day weekend, everyone. God bless our troops from everyone here at the Webcomic Beacon Newscast. And speaking of which, we have with us here today, from BladeBunny.com, Eric Kimball.
And salutations, Internet.
Our news editor, Jason Strasberg.
Hi, everybody.
And I'm Thomas Revor from 910 Comics. That's 910cmx.com. And this is our news. Our top story today is the Seattle webcomic, The Oatmeal, generates a bit of controversy. For those of you who have been sitting on the edge of your seat on the who is better, Nikola Tesla or Thomas Edison, they've waded straight to this controversy with both fists a-flying. That's right. They over at The Oatmeal, which is at theoatmeal.com, they have gone through and have brought up a bunch of their own comics talking about why Nikola Tesla was the greatest geek who ever lived. I am glad that someone is finally taking a stand on this raging controversy. And after this, let's go ahead and take a look at the buzz with Jason.
Thanks, Tom. Okay, two stories in buzz this week. Coming up, starting from the Comics Reporter, we have an interview with Faith Erin Hicks. Tom Spurgeon goes over, asks her several questions on topics concerning learning about comics through doing them and the differences between web comics now and 10 years ago. Also, working with other writers. So it's an interesting read to take a look. And Faith Erin Hicks has been a very big name in webcomics lately. And we've seen a lot of news stories from her. So get some background. Next story coming up is from The Hollywood Reporter, where if you haven't heard already, we get a big download on why the top publishers DC and Marvel are making a push to spotlight mainstream gay characters. With Marvel, it is per an announcement on The View that an openly gay X-Men character, Northstar, will propose to his boyfriend in issue number 50 and marry in 51. And then with DC, there's an announcement from Dan DiDio at London's Kapow Comic Book Convention that a previously straight superhero would come out as gay and become one, quote, of their most prominent gay characters, unquote. The reporter does go on to remind us that this is that major publishers have explored LGBT storylines before with Batwoman, Astonishing X-Men, Archie, and X-Factor. It just looks like it's becoming more prominent now. That's it for the buzz. I'm going to hand it over to Eric.
Thank you, Jason. First off, in our business news this week is an announcement that Bad Machinery has gone to print with Oni Press. This is after Oni Press has picked up Penny Arcade back in April. They now are picking up Jason Allison's webcomic Bad Machinery for publication, collecting the previously published web versions of the comic. One of the interesting things the publisher states, we're at the point where the term webcomic is becoming redundant. James Lucas Jones, the publisher of Oni Press, states, comics are about storytelling and not the delivery system. Being a publisher in the 21st century is reliant on recognizing talent wherever you find it. Jason Allison is one of the talented guys, and we're proud to have Bad Machinery droning the Oni Press library. That news coming to us from comicbooked.com. Our next story coming to us from GigaOM is about the Iron Skies web created movie. Iron Skies is a movie created on the web using Kickstarter to fund the creation. The creators of Iron Skies are big proponents of the sharing nature of the internet. One of the creators stated in 2009, "Piracy in its most common form, digital download, is not a crime." However, this all changed once they found a distributor. Within months of signing up with a distributor, cease and desist letters were sent out to people who were sharing Iron Skies on torrent sites. Not only were they cease and desist letters, it was the cease and desist letter stated to avoid suit, the person must pay approximately $1,000 fine to avoid the lawsuit. There has been no official response from the creators, but there seems to be some tension between the creators' view of things and the distributors.
We're going to go back over to Jason for some more business news. Jason.
All right, thanks, Tom. Okay, coming up next, we have Mark Andrew Smith interviewed by Robot 6 about Sullivan Sluggers and the Kickstarter and the future of print distribution. The interview really goes into the history of Sullivan Sluggers, talking about how it was originally optioned by Image, how they took it into the venue of Kickstarter later on, and more about the business behind the scenes, talking about the number of pledges and how what Smith's opinion is on if this is a repeatable thing. An interesting reach. Take a look at it. And then the next story comes from, again, we're from Robot 6, and concerning Mark Wade and his views on file sharing. It's kind of wrapped up in this quote. It says, and considering it, your miles may vary, but he's okay with torrenters and pirates sharing Insufferable, not just because that it's free anyway, but that they're charging for it, he'd still be happy because of the exposure and the promotion. It's worth it more to him now at this point than dollars and cents. So he's recognizing the fact that it's bringing things out. And then he brings it up saying that he has he's done a lot of research on this and that he has a zero conclusive evidence that on the whole piracy removes more money from the system than it adds to it, which is a great quote. Okay. That is the end for our business news. So I'm going to pass it back to you, Tom.
Thank you, Jason. And we've got a bit of tech news today, starting off with the fact that Pakistan has shut down the internet for about 8 hours, across their country. It was 2 years to the day after the Everybody Draw Muhammad Day started the global controversy. For those who don't know, it is considered against the Islam religion, the Muslim religion, to draw images of the Prophet Muhammad. So when this started up, Pakistan has gone through and shut down the internet and Twitter for about 8 hours on Sunday, last Sunday. The Post's Richard Levy reports from Islamabad that before Prime Minister Raza Gilani intervened to end the ban and restore access, the shutdown was called a, quote, high-level decision, unquote, and was prompted by Twitter's refusal to remove content considered objectionable to Muslims, official in Pakistan said. Shows that this is not one world, folks. Next up, over from GigaOhm.com. They are talking about the new interactive storytelling platform called Quickie. That's Q-W-I-K-I. And it burst onto the scene with a cool platform for creating automated multimedia presentations on the fly. Well, now they have a major backer in the form of ABC. ABC News has come out and said that they're going to start using Quickie to tell news stories online. The network has already started putting together stories, which also appear in its Quickie channel. Next, over at paidcontent.org, they have an interview with Bent Mullenweg, the founder of WordPress and Automattic, that says that a radically simplified WordPress is on its way, oriented more towards mobile content users. This is a great idea, and I personally love the disclosure that Automattic, the maker of WordPress.com, is backed by True Ventures, a venture capital firm that is an investor in the parent company of this blog, Giga Omni Media. Malik, founder of Giga Omni Media, is also a venture partner at True. Why can't we get more disclosures like that from some of these people covering stories? And finally, also over at Giga Ohm, they have a story talking about the growing epidemic of page bloat. That's right, the average web page is now more than 1 megabyte. For those of us on high speed, it's not a problem, but you know, it's a far cry from a decade ago when all of our web pages were nothing but text and less than 1K. They give a description as to what's behind the rampant page bloat and that mobile users are going to be the biggest losers simply because of the restrictions that are being placed on the file downloads on the mobile systems now. We'll have more of this information over on our show notes. But for right now, let's go ahead and take a look at some of the tidbits and back to Jason.
Thanks, Tom. Okay, it is the season for commencement speeches, and usually I'm not too big about them, but this one from Neil Gaiman actually has some pretty good advice coming to us from Bleeding Cool. We have a video of Mr. Guyman addressing the University of the Arts class of 2012 at their commencement. It's just a very interesting video to watch, something you should take a look at. And then our next story, we get the news from Steve Jackson Games that there will be a Penny Arcade booster pack for the Munchkin game. It's just a booster pack to the main game. Looks like that there was a preview at PAX East. I didn't know that. And we can combine this with your Munchkin deck already. So go check it out. And that is it for me. Moving on to Eric.
We have two stories in our oddities this week. Starting out, coming to us from Comic Alliance, Marvel is launching a superhero jewelry collection to commemorate their favorite superheroes. Not really sure what the goal is here, but if you want ugly jewelry in superhero format, this is the place to go. Our next one is just to remind you that Snowflame knows no pain. The 1990s New Guardians hero, New Guardians villain, Snowflame, made popular by Linkara on his Top the Fourth Wall blog, has now gotten its own dedicated webcomic made for it, in which you can check out the adventures of Snowflame as he beats upon Batman and Raven and other famous heroes from the DC universe, DC and Marvel universes. That takes us through our oddities, and back to you, Tom.
Apparently those in the Marvel company want more blam with their bling.
Yeah. Ka-ching.
They're people just buy horrible, it. Tom. They're just awful-looking things.
I've seen them, and we can talk about more of this in the discussion portion, but I actually kind of like the Captain America cufflinks, but the rest of them, I'm sorry, Captain America shield chandelier earrings. How can women wear those, or men wear these things, without having their head dragging on the ground?
They're made of vibranium, Tom. Lightweight and powerful ally.
Now, the Punisher earrings actually give me pause, though. Oh dear.
I don't know. I'm waiting for a Punisher lip stud for people who are shooting off their mouth.
Oh, let's go back to the other one.
And let's go back. We'll have, hopefully, not as many bad puns, but a lot more discussion about the topics that we've got right after this.
This program is a part of the Webcast Beacon Network and is hosted on the Rampage Network. Follow us on Twitter for news links as we find them at WebcomicZ. Email us at webcomicbeaconnews@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 1-320-310-0922. Love the show? Please grab the iTunes or RSS feed. We're also on Stitcher.com with Stitcher Smart Radio, an on-demand service where you can stitch podcast and radio show feeds together for your own personal streaming service. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity and the creative process since 2007. Webcomics, comic books, news, and web fiction. At webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
Welcome back to episode 70 of the Webcomic Beacon Newscast, and it's discussion time. Here with me for the discussion today is, from BladeBunny.com, Eric Kimball.
Greetings.
And our guest host today, the business manager for Misfile.com, and the wife of Misfile creator Chris Hazelton. Chris Hazelton.
Hello, everybody.
For those who are not confused, you're a better person than I am. But let's go ahead and start off our discussion. Our top story for discussion today is the Marvel and 1928 Jewelry Company launching their superheroic jewelry collection. Oh, Lord. Kristen, since you're our token female today, I'm going to let you start off this discussion. What are your opinions of these jewelry pieces?
I'm shaking my head. Not that anyone can see it. I just have to say, the ideas sound, especially for the younger crowd, mostly female, high school maybe, but the cost is a little much. Just by looking at it, some of it's kind of cool, and some of it looks like it was designed by a 4-year-old.
Yeah, it's Here it is expensive and ugly and related to comic books. And yes, women are reading comic books, but they're not reading Punisher. I mean, it's strange.
With the exception of the Punisher stuff, which A is ugly and B makes no sense, the rest of it makes some sort of sense. I mean, B blockbuster of this year, the Avengers. Raimi Spider-Man series set an all-new records as well.
So, what high schooler is going to pay $78 for a Spider-Man web bracelet with ring?
Exactly. The Spider-Man Spider-Drop necklace, which to me, and this is coming from a man's opinion, doesn't look too bad. I mean, it's got a nice design, nice simple with the drop-down chain that dangles where men like to look. For $24, that's reasonable and it's decorative.
Yes, but you can get something better looking for that same price. So why pay for these look very poorly designed. Sort of strange situation where it seems like they think any synergy is good synergy. You know, there's a movie out that everyone's watching. So, of course, they're going to buy jewelry of that movie. I mean, that doesn't happen. I mean, was there Men in Black jewelry made? It doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. Well, and it's $78. That's a lot of money to plunk down on Spider-Man.
On a bracelet.
Yeah.
And then the other piece of it is they're targeting young men and they're giving cufflinks. How often do you think high schoolers wear some sort of jacket, shirt, or tuxedo that they need cufflinks for?
How often do men wear cufflinks nowadays?
I mean,
And some of these, I mean, some of them make sense. If the Captain America earrings, if they didn't have these big old dangly copies of the shield hanging down that looks like it hangs down to their shoulders, if it was just a shield, that might not be too obtrusive and that one might look good. But things like the Thor crystal hammer ring, that's supposed to be a hammer? That's a block. There's no handle there. That's not a hammer.
You wouldn't let your 12-year-old wear dangling earrings like that?
Well, I might let my 12-year-old wear the Punisher bullet dangle earrings with these Punisher skulls up by the earlobe, dangling down with two bullets and a gun. I mean, that to me, that just says the epitome of class.
But
the dangle Wolverine claws.
I want to bring up, you know, we're going to talk about this more later with the gay characters, but I think there's a similar sort of mindset about announcing your gay character on The View as, you know, just the sort of, okay, women are now starting to get into comics, so let's just bombard them, you know, and there was a quote from Robot Six saying, do you know what the Venn diagram of people who watch The View and people who will ever buy an Astonishing X-Men comics looks like? It's two circles on separate sheets of paper, about a mile and a half between those two sheets of paper.
Child or grandchild that might be into it.
And some of the stuff, I mean, the Captain America shield belt buckle and the Spider-Man head belt buckle, I'm sorry, these are not new things. These were belt buckles that I wore when I was 8.
And that's one of the things I think will actually sell.
But selling for cheaper.
Yes. So some of them, it just makes no sense. And some of them are just gaudy, and some of them are overpriced, and all of them make no sense and are gaudy and ugly.
Most of them are overpriced. I mean, even if you, like, some of the Spider-Man stuff you can use for a Halloween costume, an adult might use it, or that type of piece, so I can see that stuff going, because it can be taken as just, like, you know, spiders, Halloween type of stuff, but some of the other stuff, it's clear as day, and I don't think it's going to sell.
Now, I will say, if the Captain America shield belt buckle is real size, I can see them selling a lot of those in Texas. But let's go ahead and go over to our next story for discussion, and that's the controversy over on the Oatmeal about Tesla versus Edison. Now, for those who don't know, Nikola Tesla is considered one of the great geniuses of all time. He was the person who invented such things as alternating current. He's allegedly the person who created broadcast radio, transmission across radio waves, many other things which have been attributed to him. Thomas Edison also considered one of the great geniuses of our day, but he was more of a businessman rather than an inventor. Yes, he did invent some things, but most of the things with his name on the patent were invented by the Edison laboratories that he oversaw rather than Edison himself.
Just makes him a good businessman.
Exactly. Not much different than some of the creator-owned content stuff that we talk about here on the newscast. But, Eric, you wanted this one discussed because apparently the big controversy really isn't Tesla versus Edison, but the oatmeal itself versus Forbes magazine?
Yeah, well, the interesting thing was the Oatmeal posted this. I mean, this is a comic blog, so it just posted how great Tesla was and how evil Edison was. And then the technology blogger over at Forbes came back and said and refuted the oatmeal. And there's sort of been this war going back and forth between them over this completely obscure topic of Edison versus Tesla. So it was interesting. I don't know if there's much to discuss here, but it was sort of a fun little thing of seeing how interconnected all these media are now these days.
Now, it does. Go ahead, Kristen.
I was going to say, and I bet you the oatmeal never saw that coming.
Now, it does have one thing in here that I want to give a little bit of background to, just because I love the story. One of the paragraphs in here says, the comic also villainizes Thomas Edison as a pet electrocuting, misguided, evil man who poisoned his assistant with radiation while testing early X-rays. The story behind that line is that when energy transmission to homes was coming out, Tesla had created what we use nowadays of alternating current, which was being sponsored by the Westinghouse company. Thomas Edison had a different method using direct current. The big differences of this was they eventually went with AC, alternating current, because it could be transmitted across larger distances and not needing substations about every few blocks like DC did. Edison, in great promo things, did a couple of things. First of all, DC current was safer, a lot safer than alternating current. So he had set up an example by using alternating current on an animal, electrocuting it. In fact, he actually tried to get people to call the electrocution, execution by electrocution, Westinghoused. So I can see where that light is coming from. But that, again, that's just coming back. That's not evil. That's business.
Well, this was a sort of very big – I mean, this was a big controversy back in the day, and the rivalry between these two people was pretty hot. So, I mean, it's not a situation where they're just making something up. There was sort of a hot battle between these two. And Edison did win out basically by being a better businessman, and Tesla went a little funny in his old age.
Yeah. Well, and there's a lot of patents that were invented by – reportedly invented by Tesla, but have other people's names on it. Like I said, I mean, Marconi was one. Reportedly, I mean, I'm not saying that it's true. I don't know. But reportedly, it was Marconi who came up with it at the, after seeing what Tesla had done and being the first one to patent it. Not so much who created, but who got to the press first. But I mean, okay.
I was gonna say, I'm enjoying reading some of the on the article itself, some of the clever Twitter posts that were like cracking me up. The one guy wrote, trying to find out why the oatmeal and the guy from Forbes are fighting over Tesla. They only had one big song. What's next, White Lion? That one got.
Hey, come on. White Lion gave us the best movie theme of all time, so. Yes, I'm a Transformers fanboy, among many other things. But on that, let's go ahead and go over to our next topic for discussion. And that is on the article over on GigaOhm.com by Joshua Bixby about the growing epidemic of page bloat. Now, we talked a little bit about this in the newscast, but come on, folks. I mean, you're complaining about new web pages being 1 or 2 megabytes.
But, I mean, it is a problem for two very big reasons, because this is on average growth. I go to first of all, there's web pages I go to take forever to load because they're loading every single Flash content, ActiveX, you know, craziness. And I don't go back to those sites. You lose readers when you start making your pages too big, and readers are very sensitive. I looked at my analytics, and the best I can say is when a new reader come to your site, you've got 45 seconds. If you don't catch them in 45 seconds, they're gone. And if your page is loading in that time, forget it. They will leave having never seen your content. And this is the problem with Flash viewers. This is the problem with a lot of this technology. People don't want to sit around for it. And the second thing,
I mean, we're not talking about the age of dial-up anymore. I mean, let's go ahead and take a web page as an example that I had recently worked on that I think Kristen has a little bit of experience with, where we had to go through and we changed the style of ads and how they're loading. I mean, with webcomics, I mean, bam, you've got one big content right there just in your page itself. I mean, in your comic itself. Right. Then you've got to support it, which means that you're going to have ads, which are going to be more graphics and sometimes video. Yeah, you want to talk about web bloat. I mean, some of these things are a necessity. Now, I mean, if you're going through and you've got a little personal blog, yeah, as we talked about with the WordPress store, where they're paring it down for the mobile content. But go back to the text-only stuff, but there are other things out there. And what are they comparing for the webpage? Are they talking about including in things like YouTube with all their streaming video or the Apple movie trailers or webcomics, where we're all a graphic medium?
But have you gone to a page and the page starts to load? And first of all, it loads the little Flash banner on the bottom of the page that follows you all over the screen. And then it loads that little turning page icon in the left hand of the screen. And then it loads the Flash chat box on the other hand of the side of the screen. And then it just keeps on loading all of this non-essential content, stuff that I don't care about, I don't want to see, and it's taking time for me, and it's taking my bandwidth, and if I'm on a mobile phone, I'm getting pissed at these people because they are costing me money to load their little floating pop-up screen that says, hey, come buy our stuff. And
make two versions of your site. Make a version for normal users at home or anywhere else that have a decent connection, and make a web-based mobile version.
And that's fine. Exactly. You want to do that? Great. I'm going to use your mobile version at home. I'm not going to your site because I don't have the time to waste on it.
Then you have to make it more enticing to say, okay, you only get XYZ on the quick mobile version, and if you want to get the rest of it or something, a better piece of that puzzle, now you have to go to the regular version. You just make it into a business routine, that's all.
See, and you're not really talking about page bloat. You're talking about page design. It's not that these features take a lot of time to load, but you were right. They're unnecessary features.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. It's that they do take time to load, and I don't want them. And that's the real problem with page bloat. I mean, if you talk about the business decision, I think you're going to find that I would challenge anyone to do this test. Do a simple page that doesn't have anything on it. Very simple, easy to load. Just the content. Well, and then do your page where you think you've added all your value and see where people choose to go.
Here's what there's a paragraph in the story that says, the main culprits for this growth are images, which account for more than half of the average page size, and third-party scripts like analytics, ads, and social sharing buttons.
Mm-hmm.
But what's really behind it is our insatiable desire for richer, more dynamic content, coupled with site owners' desire to track user behavior and get us to share their content using every conceivable widget.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that second half of it, first of all, the first half, if you remove the main culprits, you know, which are what? Images, third-party scripts like analytics, ads, and social sharing buttons. You have got text. I mean, let's go back to Golden Gopher.
Let's not talk about the main image. We're comics, so we have a main image. That obviously has to stay. But does it? Here's a question. If you go to a site and it has nice curved little banners and, you know, everything looks, you know, curved and smooth and it looks like it's floating out in front of the page, and you go to another site that's just a black screen and comic, does it matter to you?
Absolutely. It's presentation.
Yeah,
now, I agree. To me, it doesn't. I want the bloody comic. I don't want to see how good a web design you're doing. And I will put up with your design elements if they are not too intrusive, but if they are too big and they're taking too much time to download, I'm not going to deal with your site because I'm going to have to page through your comic because I'm going to want to read your comic. And if every time I'm hitting that next page button, you're costing me half a second, I'm leaving.
But we're also looking at two things. I mean, let's go back to that second half of that. You know, what's really behind it is our insatiable desire for richer and more dynamic content. I think that right there.
And we're taking in the perception of webcomics. Now, obviously, I don't think that the articles mainly pointed towards that. You have people, families, mothers, pictures. We're just picture-happy society in general. There's pictures in the background, pictures in the foreground, pictures on top of pictures, wherever you go to somebody's website that talks about anybody, God knows what. So in the comic sense, yeah, we have that main image. But in the rest of the world, we're just a very image-happy society at the moment.
But my argument here is that I think many web designers make the mistake that they think design is more important than content and that people actually care about their beautiful design. We want a clean design. We want something that's easy to navigate. But other than that, I just want the information. And the design of the page doesn't matter to me, and particularly those little social networking widgets, those drive me nuts because they take forever to load on a page. And while you're saying you have dial-up, I have wireless, and sometimes my wireless is not good. Sometimes in a coffee shop where I have a really bad wireless, I go on business trips, and the wireless in hotels are horrible, and I don't read certain comics when I go overseas because their pages just have too much crap on it.
And I'll agree with that. To me, that is web design. I mean, I look at the site like, let me use my own site of murrayandlouie.com as an example. I mean, we've got the simple banner at top. We've got the comic. We've got some ads in there. And we've got the two characters who are set at the edges of the page with a little bit of JavaScript. I mean, so it's simple. It's a clean design without overloading.
That's fine.
But then I look at something like, as much as I love the comic, Girl Genius, where it is very graphic heavy beyond the comic. A lot of ads on there. I mean, but then they can get away with it. And, of course, a very intricate background. And everything else will take time to load.
Yeah. Girl Genius is not the worst offender, though.
No. There are those that are worse, a lot worse than it. But to me, I mean, that's part of web design is looking for the content and looking for something. And when you've got a comic that floats above the page or has a multimedia in there, it works depending upon the way that it's done. Ian Sampson's City of Reality is a Flash-based comic, and it takes time to load that, but it worked within the context.
And see, now here, let's take a look at Ian Sampson because it is a very unique storytelling method and he has to use Flash, but I don't think that the Flash is a benefit. It's simply because of the way he's doing it, he has to use Flash. There are plenty of pages out there that have Flash. I mean, Flash is really the real enemy here. There are plenty of pages that have Flash everything.
Yes.
All over. And it's particularly that stupid floating toolbar at the bottom of the screen that's taking away area from the actual comic and the little page turn icon at the top and the floating navigation bars that just are irritating and annoying and also are taking up my bandwidth. And I don't go back to those comics, and I think a lot of those comics have a lot of problems with readerships, and they have no idea why, and it's because they put all of this cool-looking stuff on the page.
Too much junk.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I go back down to web design. I mean, we're actually going to be getting worse with this with the inclusion of HTML5 that has a lot of Flash-like capabilities built into it through JavaScripting and SOAP and other things in there.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the thing. Good web design makes small pages. Good web design isn't just it's pretty. Good web design makes a small page. If you're doing good web design, your page is optimized and has a small profile.
Well, good web design makes a page that fits the content and is best for the viewer. So, I mean, it all depends. I mean, take a look at what do you consider as a better design? Google's search page or Yahoo's search page.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because of the what capacity and what the functionality of the page, Google is, I mean, simple, clean. It's got the one thing there, and now it's got the toolbar at the top for fast links. But it's a big, clean page. Lots of white space on it. Yahoo inundates you with ads, stories, and a lot of stuff that you don't want when you just want to search.
Yep. And, I mean, that's the perfect example. You know, Yahoo has a bigger page, and they think that they have, oh, well, they're giving all this information. No, they're just wasting my time. I mean, and they're wasting my bandwidth as I'm trying to download, and I get very angry about it and upset when I see a page that takes a long time to load, and that's the best way to lose me as a reader.
Well, let's go ahead and go on to our next story for discussion. Yes, we knew we had to talk about it, and that is DC and Marvel jockeying for media spotlight with gay storylines. Well, let's start off with what it says. Dan DiDio, co-publisher of DC Comics, made the announcement in London's Kapow Comic Convention after being asked about a recent interview he had given with The Advocate, which had questioned the company's decision to change such things as the age and race of characters, but not their sexual orientation. When DC relaunched the New 52. Bobby Wayne, the senior vice president for sales, compared the company to President Obama, saying its policy, quote, has evolved. What they're saying is that one of their major characters, and the speculation has come out as to which character it's going to be, is going to be making the transition, coming out of the closet, going from straight to gay. I contrast this with what Marvel is doing, where they're having a long established homosexual character in the character of Northstar, originally from Alpha Flight and now in the X-Men, who is proposing and marrying his longtime boyfriend. Yeah. And no matter what you think about gay marriage or whatever, we've got the two ways of two companies, and it's shown that the way that companies have been handling things recently, DC, which is going for the fast gimmick. Well, we need to get more readers in because our New 52 is failing miserably. Let's make somebody gay! As opposed to Marvel, which has got the story progression where they're taking a character, and this just, it makes the next logical step in the way that the things are doing.
Better planning.
Yeah. It makes more sense. I mean, but There's two things to say here. I mean, first of all, yeah, this is DC going, me too. They saw that it was getting noticed that a Marvel character was getting gay, and that a Marvel character was getting married, and so they said me too. Now, technically, Archie beat them both to the punch, and they're copying Archie comics at this point. But yeah, this was just sort of DC going, no, wait, pay attention to us too. We're going to do something that way. Here's the thing. I wonder if Marvel and DC understand who read comics these days. I mean, how is this going to work?
It's very obvious DC doesn't.
You know, because I assume that in Marvel, Northstar is going to get married. And we shall never speak of it again. You know, it will come up very rarely in passing because that's not the core demographic. You know, this is the
core. It is
the
demographic that's there. I mean,
it is a demographic that's there, but it's
not. I think it's larger than you think it is.
It is there, but I don't know if this. I mean,
I think it's more of a political statement, honestly.
Yeah.
And I know you're thinking the one's jumping on the other one's bandwagon, but have you ever thought that the higher ups might have looked at it as more of a support, saying that if you're going to go down this and you might get your flack, et cetera, for doing it in your comic, we're going to do the same thing to sort of say, you know what, we're okay with it too. And since we're the two major players in this game, if we both collaborate and say we're going to do it, maybe they'll get the hint and back off and let us make our statement.
Well,
but the statement comes out after the Kevin Keller Gets Married comic sales sold out twice on two print runs and just went through the roof. And so it's sort of, I can't see it as a political statement of saying, well, since you've made all that money, we're going to come out and support you because of the hard time. It's,
I do think
that politics does play a part of it. I mean, I look back at this quote from Bobby Wayne. I mean, he's comparing the company to President Obama. He's not saying, well, we're going to have a gay character. He's saying he is making this a political thing just by that statement right there. And again, the way that it's happening,
Bob's okay with it, so are we, is basically what they're saying.
Yeah. At Astonishing X-Men, I don't know how prominent a character Northstar is in Astonishing X-Men. If this was still in Alpha Flight, where he was a major player in Alpha Flight, I could see this being a thing that we brought up. If he's a major player in the Astonishing X-Men comic, then I could see this being a regular thing. And it, like I said, I see that as a story progression. You've got this character, and they've shown this relationship for a number of years. Yes, is it a political statement? Yes, we're supporting gay marriage. But I do see this as a story progression. The coming out of the closet storyline for a let me go ahead and say that with the reveal, who the rumors are saying. I mean, we've heard, of course, Jon Jones, the Martian Manhunter. Yeah, you get it, Manhunter, ha ha ha. To Alan Scott, the original Green Lantern from the 40s. And who is the parent of two other heroes who's long been married before the New 52. I mean, it makes no sense. If there were clues along the way, even in the New 52, it would be one thing. But it's not.
I mean, but I'm sorry. I can't see either one of these as a political statement. I mean, I see both of this as sort of a crass money grab. Because simply it worked out so well for Archie that they want to jump on that bandwagon.
I think a little of everything. I think, yes, there's always money involved. It is a business. They have to run it. They have to pay their bills. They want to make a profit. But I think it's a piece of all of the above that we've all said.
Yeah, exactly. And if I have to include the political statement in. If it was something by itself, I would completely agree with you about it being a crass money grab. But so many of their storylines are so politically charged, especially on one end of the political spectrum, it has to be taken into account. Now, let me go ahead and continue on. We'll end this off with some of this thing. Fan speculation has also centered on the New 52, Robin, Damian Wayne, Tim Drake, now Red Robin, and an earlier version of Batman's sidekick Robin, the villains Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy, or fan favorite Lobo, the Interstellar Bounty Hunter, and Wally West, a version of the Flash who has not yet been introduced in the New 52 reboot. Let me end off this portion of the discussion by saying, you know, Frederick Wortham is giggling in his grave. And I'm sure Frederick Wortham, author of Seduction of the Innocent, so, you know, he's just, well, let's go on to the next topic. And this was one that you had asked to have included into the cast, Eric, and that is about Iron Sky's creators are profile sharing.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sorry, when I first heard about this movie, about the movie Iron Skies, space Nazis from the moon, yes. This says direct-to-video all over it.
Hey,
well,
Nazis have to live somewhere too.
Yeah,
that's what South America
is for. It has direct. It would normally have direct to video all over it. It has all over it. Kickstarter phenomenal success written all over it now. Because if you say, "Hey, are you supporting the space Nazi movie?" Every geek in the world says, "Yes, yes, I am supporting that."
Well, let's go ahead and say, I mean, because their budget was 7.5 million euros, I believe, mm-hmm. and 1 million of that came from Kickstarter and fan support.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the fact that it is a German movie, I believe, which makes no sense. I thought they had laws about the way that Nazis could be used over in Germany.
I believe the laws don't include
being on the moon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it makes no sense about that. But, I mean, it was started off as direct-to-video on the web. Yeah. And if they had gone through and stuck with that, but somebody saw it and a company went through and was going to send it out to movie theaters.
Right.
Now, it turned out after the contract was signed, they were going to distribute it to movie theaters for 1 day.
Yeah.
And then it was going to go direct-to-DVD.
Yeah.
So, I mean, more of a publicity thing.
If you read behind the lines, what happened was these guys made their movie, got phenomenal sense of success from online, got a lot of support for online, and they were very pro this sort of online community. because it had supported them. And then this distributor came to them and said, hey, we're going to distribute it to movie theaters. And will you sign over some of the rights and we'll distribute it to movie theaters? And they said, oh, I mean, that sounded like a dream come true to them. So they said that, so they signed the contract, and literally, like, you know, some cartoon villain, the distributors suddenly started laughing and say, we own you now. We're only going to distribute it for one day to theaters, and then we're going to do exactly what you were going to do with it, except now we get to keep a portion of the profits, you know. And oh, so they got
business.
Yeah, you know, they got screwed on this, and then the distributors started targeting the fans. You know, the people who had supported the movie and sending out these cease and desist letters. It's really sort of a cautionary tale. You know, you can don't just think because you're big stuff online that you can go and sign any contract you want and it's all going to work out for the best.
See,
I'm surprised their lawyers or somebody, whoever was looking at the contract, didn't take a little more heed in paying attention to that piece of it. Because if you think they were so online and pro online, to have something so complete opposite than what their beliefs were to be actually in that contract.
No, I don't think it was in their contract. I just think they didn't even think about file sharing. You know, they said, well, all right, file sharing, you know, no one ever does anything about file sharing. They always complain. And so when they came down so hard on this, I think it was I'm pretty sure it was a shock to these guys, although we don't know. We haven't heard anything from them.
True.
Well, so I when I read this story, the first thing that came to mind, as I told y'all during the break, was the cautionary tale of the movie The Wizard of Sweden Time, created by fan favorite Mike Jitlov, where it's a tale, it's a semi-biographical tale of a creator wanting to make a movie, getting suckered in by an evil producer, and having to fight for his rights. And the reason why it's a cautionary tale is because it was a little prescient, because the guy who played the evil producer in the movie was in fact the producer of the movie who did steal the rights for distribution in movies, VHS, it specifies VHS and other media for sale. And Jitlov has been fighting for a long time to get the rights. Well, what it did not specify was file sharing. So even though Jitlov cannot make a dime off the movie, he can legally distribute the movie across the internet for free.
Yeah.
So
I'm pretty sure the contract didn't specify this file sharing outright. It just said, hey, they own the right to distribute. And then it probably said for all types of distribution. And I'm pretty sure they just said, oh, well, okay, yeah, that makes sense. They're a distributor. They're going to distribute it. And, you know, and they say, and, you know, it probably said we have the right to sue anyone who distributes it without our permission.
Yeah. But I also wonder, I mean, when they signed the contract, were they that gullible and got taken by it? Or did they see dollar signs and didn't think about it?
Well,
that's exactly what I was thinking. Was it who cares? I have enough money in my pocket. I'll take that hit. Or I didn't see it coming and they were completely sideswiped.
I think that my impression, because there's a statement about the showing it for one day only and the public post that these guys are screwing us, makes me kind of err on the side of they didn't really pay attention well enough to the contract, because they got screwed as well.
Well, I do know. I mean, I remember seeing advertisements for this thing back at San Diego Comic-Con last year.
Mm-hmm.
And when they've already got this thing set up, well, we're going to distribute it this way. Having the movie out in theaters in one day is a great publicity gimmick. I mean, I'm sure they were looking at Rocky Horror Picture Show and wanting it to become a cult classic like that. And well, go and see it for the one day. It's in the theaters.
But that's not what the creators wanted. I mean, that's the thing.
But again, I wonder, were they suckered or were they willingly suckered?
Well, they said they were being screwed by the one day. This is a public statement that they said.
Yeah.
So,
but what they say publicly and what happened behind the scenes. I don't know. This is idle speculation. After seeing other things like this in the business world, to where people will sign something and then go back and want it rescinded. You know. Mm-hmm. So, I I really can't say. But we've got one topic left to discuss. And that is that Pakistan shuts down Twitter over the Everybody Draw Muhammad Day.
Yeah.
On one hand, I mean, this is, again, this is American speaking. So where we have freedom of the press against freedom of religion, and where does it come in handy? Where does it come? Where does it take place? Where should we come down on the side of it? Pakistan is not America. They are run by people in the Muslim religion. They are, do have people that think that anybody, like their religion says, anybody who draws this is wrong. Now, they're not saying that everybody else should shut this down. They're just saying that we're going to, and eventually their president came back after about 8 hours and said, you know, this is wrong. We're going to go ahead and open it back up. It's not a case of Theo Van Hawk being stabbed because he makes a movie about Muhammad. We've seen a lot of things about this 2 years ago when the first things started up because Muhammad.
The person who started it, she had to change her identity because a cleric put a death threat out against her. So, you know, the shutting down of Twitter is annoying. Threatening with death the person who suggested that we start do this, that's crossing the line a little bit.
Yeah, and some of the things that have come up, I mean, 2 years ago, I mean, was when South Park tried to do something about Muhammad.
Yeah.
And they were threatened with death by a pro-jihadist website.
Yeah.
And
it's really hard to know how to come down on this because, yes, people have a right to – I mean, frankly, if – let's say there was a website that is promoting anti-American is very anti-American and showing flag burnings 24/7. We would – you know, you would say there probably is a call for blocking of that site. Or, you know, we block pedophilia sites because we say that is
pedophilia is illegal. Flag burning is legal.
Yeah. Okay. But we block pedophilia sites. It's illegal to draw Muhammad in Pakistan. So they have a right to block illegal activity. Now we can argue whether that's the right to block, whether that should be illegal or not, but that's illegal activity. So that, you know, they have a right to do that, I guess.
Yeah,
just I mean, that's like why, I have a right to block pedophile sites, but
I mean that's why the whole I mean I'm an American thing where we have this freedom to a point, and where we are used to freedom of religion or freedom of the press to where we can do this, we can draw pictures that make the president look like an absolute fool, or well, not that the vice president needs any help with that, as opposed to Pakistan where it is a. I mean, if this were to happen in Iran, I mean, where I'm sure that's not because they have this thing already locked down anyway. If someone were to draw a picture of Muhammad, you know, satirizing him, they'd be put to death there.
Yeah. But I mean, that's the part I find repulsive. It's not the blocking of websites because we block websites all the time. There are lots of websites we block. We block file sharing websites, or we try to at least. It's when you're calling to murder someone because they're not following your religion. That's not good. And I find it slightly annoying that there isn't more outcry about that. You know, that anytime this sort of happens, there's not a really big amount. I don't hear the outcry for the murders. It's, oh, they blocked Twitter. That's horrible. And it's like, yeah, and they're killing people too. Yeah, that should be mentioned repeatedly, and we should be upset about that. I mean, frankly, I can live without knowing what Justin Bieber had for lunch today. That's fine. When they start killing people, I want people to stop that.
And let's take a look at the other aspect of this too. People over this could be high level officials over in Pakistan did ask Twitter to remove what was considered objectionable content to Muslims, and Twitter refused.
Yes.
Now, knowing this and knowing that some of the content that was going to come up would result in death threats, I could see not just the religious aspect of it, but more of a safety aspect. Let's block this so that people don't see this and get in a tizzy about it and try to kill somebody over it.
Yeah. That could be a very good argument. Although they didn't play that argument very well. And I don't think that argument would play that well of saying, yeah, look at, we got people over here who are so freaking crazy. We can't show them certain things.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's going to be, you're not going to go and say that most of our people are batshit crazy, whether they are or not. All it takes is just a few of them. I mean, over here, the last thing that their article talks about is a man by the name of Zachary Chesser. Zachary Chesser. He was a man over in North Virginia who threatened Parker and Stone, Matt Stone and Trey Parker, the creators of South Park, because of the Muhammad Saturday.
Yep.
He was arrested months later while trying to leave the country for Uganda. He reportedly planned to join an Islamic terrorist group in Somalia. In February of 2011, Chesser, then 21, was sentenced to 25 years in prison. To where it wasn't the vast multitude of Muslims here in the U.S., who I may have looked at this the same way, well, probably not even as badly as the Scientologists did about the Scientology episode. Mm-hmm. They just looked at it and said, you know, that's what they do. This is bad to us. Yeah, I won't watch it. But rather one nutcase who decided to take the law into his own hands.
Yeah, but I mean,
but yeah, absolutely. And on that note, I want to go ahead and say thank you to our guest hosts and regular hosts, our news editor, Jason Strasberg, who was with us for the first part and helped with us, our news collection and such. From BladeBunny.com, Eric Kimball, as always. Eric?
Thank you.
And of course, from MissFile.com, Kristen Hazelton. Thank you, Chris, for being here.
No problem. It was a pleasure.
And that just leaves me. I'm Thomas Rivora, your main host, and I'm from 910 Comics. That's 910CMX.com. Make sure to come and visit us. I'm going to go play some Munchkin where I can kill off the creators of Penny Arcade, and then we'll see you in the funny papers.